Welcome to the Voices of Gremlin, a digital oral history podcast, a series exploring the rich history of Gremlin State University, the city of Gremlin, and the people who make it. This podcast is a collaboration project between students and faculty of the History Department of Gremlin State University, as well as faculty from the University of Arkansas. This season of the Voices of Gremlin, a digital oral history project, has been made possible in part by a grant from the Mississippi River Delta Initiative, Miss Delta, and funded by the Gulf Research Program of National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine. Previous funding was provided by the Louisiana Endowment for Humanities, the National Endowment for the Humanities in the partnership with the Social Science Research Council, and the LaPage Center for the History and the Public Interest of Villanova University. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed by this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the funders or the producers of the podcast.
My name is Dr. Edward Holtz. I'm with Grambling State University's History Department, and I am here today with Reverend Connie Breaux. Reverend Breaux, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, I'm glad to be with you all.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to the Ruston area.
The Ruston area. Well, I'm a New Orleans girl. And for me to come to Ruston, it was like a place I really didn't know about. I heard about Gremlin. I believe I went to Gremlin football game one time as a college girl, but I didn't drive those days. And so I really didn't know where I was. I knew I was in the country. I know that. But anyway, I wind up in Ruston under an appointment from the bishop. You know, we who are ordained, we are sent out into the world to do the work of God, be the hands and the feet. So the bishop decided that he wanted to take the campus minister who was already at Gremlin for a couple of years, maybe over 15 years or more, because we were friends on the national level. So he took him to put him in a pulpit. And the young man said, the Reverend told him, I'll be glad to give up higher education if you would bring Reverend Connie Breaux to Gremlin State. Everybody knew me more as a musician, not as a pastor. They knew me as a teacher, but not as a director. I was a campus minister at SUNO, UNO, and Delgado. And the bishop decided who best to take out of New Orleans and bring her to Gremlin. So he brought me to Gremlin, made me an associate minister at Trinity. So I was the new kid on the block, the city girl, now in a country town that I had never heard of.
Can we consider the Trinity Associate Pastor and the Gremlin Wesley Fellowship like a two-point charge? Or what sort of was the relationship between those two appointments?
I would say it was like a two-point charge. Mm-hmm. What happened, they were like a two-point charge, or like they were overseeing me. Because okay. all of my funds came straight to Trinity. My funds from the higher education department in the Methodist Church. I had a board of directors that came from various churches on the campus at Gremlin, but I really wanted that to happen. Since Trinity already had phenomenal financial backing, and they also had a finance office, what best to do? What to have them to take care of? And they did. They took care of my finances. They also gave me, I had two offices, Dr. Holt. I had an office on campus, which I call an in-kind on campus. I was in a dorm. First, I was in Brown Hall. And then from Brown Hall, they put me in Robinson Hall, where I wound up having about the whole floor, first floor. I had like my own office there. I had an office for my campus ministry, Wesley Foundation. I had another office for United Campus Ministry. United Campus Ministry is what the name was. I did fight to get that changed to the Wesley Foundation with United Campus Ministry. But back to Trinity, I had a place to worship with my students. I had a place for activities. I had an office at Graham, at not Gremlin, but I had an office at Trinity upstairs that was formerly for the minister that had been there a long time. So I wind up getting his old office, and I turned it into a meeting room, a conference room. I had a restroom in there. I had my computers. I had everything that I would need. So I guess I had a 2-point charge.
Beyond the sort of handling of the finances and beyond having you in that position, was there, what was the relationship like between Trinity and Grambling?
Oh, Dr. Hogg, that became wonderful. They knew about Trinity, but not many, especially if they were African American, had gone there, unless they had somebody that worked there or they went to a funeral. I want you to know, after me being there, 22 students joined Trinity United Methodist Church. We had more faculty members becoming members of the church or coming to the church. Oh, Dr. Garwin became a member of Trinity. We had so many people becoming members of Trinity from Grambling. Fred Wyman was the pastor that I was under, and I called him more my mentor. And he loved it because the relationship became awesome. They got a chance to bring, I think he did a graduation convocation, invocation. He did an invocation for one of our graduations. And he was so delighted to have that honor bestowed upon him. And Bishop Hutchison said that he felt that I was going to be the catalyst that would bring those two worlds together. And I really didn't know what was going on at the time. But now, since I'm older, I can sit back and I can remember that was something God had his hands in this plan.
Now let's turn to a specific event that you would have encountered while you were the campus minister and at Trinity. And those are the events in 2005 of Hurricane Katrina. And I guess the first question is, how did the campus ministry mobilize when you knew those buses were about to roll onto campus?
Wow, didn't sleep at all. Was waiting, 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 waiting. Heard about Dillard was coming and the buses was coming. I don't remember how I knew about the Dillard group, but it probably came through Trinity. And that's when Trinity start getting everything together, because you know Trinity became a shelter. Trinity was a shelter. Then, as campus minister, then I start calling pastors in the community to let them know that New Orleans was coming. The people from New Orleans and surrounding areas was coming, and everything was going fine. I had the vans. We had one van. We had one van, and then we got other churches. I got other churches to get their vans together, where we could help get these people to hotels or get them around wherever they needed to go. You know, we did set up the gym, the large gym. We set the large gym up for sleeping and campus ministry students and the board, SGA. I mean, the children work together. The young people work well together, and but we had a lot to do with that. All of a sudden, I did get some problems with some of the male ministers. You know, it became who's in charge. Being who I am, I let them do think whatever they wanted to. I did what I had to do. So I stood to the point that I was the person that could get you to Trinity, because I knew what we had at Trinity. I knew that we had the accommodation to feed you. we were able to get, you know, they took the showers. Oh, and Dr. Hulk, the thing that got to me that was so beautiful was, you know, we got quite a bit of people that are very well off in Trinity. Those ladies, the ones that had other people to wash their clothes, came and they got dirty clothes from the people from New Orleans, wet, dirty clothes, and they wind up getting clothes, bringing clothes. We had a big room with nothing but clothes, for clothes and shoes, and you can go shopping, you know, at Trinity. It was a awesome sight to see and to be in. And I was glad to be a part of Trinity and the Methodist Church, knowing that we always have open hands, open arms, open hearts. And the food was delicious.
Trinity, what did that response area look like?
Well, the response that we, okay, in our gym, we had it set up for Red Cross. We had the clothing, and I think we had some beds set up too. Some cots. We had cots. LaTeX was there also helping. LaTeX and Grambling Campus Ministry, we all, you know, our student body was right there helping as a unit. We had classrooms in the educational building of Trinity that was turned into bedrooms. They were turned into bedrooms. We had some rooms, like my office became a family of, I think I had eight in that. And they were from New Orleans. They were Reverend Guy West, deceased Reverend Guy West family. His daughter, who's now deceased, her husband and children and her sister. We had them all in that room. About eight or nine of them was in that room. Every classroom, Dr. Hall became a class, a bedroom, a room to bring comfort. We had some rooms I would go and visit that had a lot of elderly people in it. I would sit, talk with them, pray with them. And while we were doing that, Trinity, I don't know what the other churches did, but Brian, Mercer, myself, Joe, I forgot Joe, he was the Asian. I don't know if he's still with you all, but he was the Asian minister that we had. We all put together the Vespers at night. So we had prayer every night, every evening. And the spiritual life, we didn't let it go. Oh Lord, and I had people from New Orleans, from down the bayou, down in Burris, all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico, that just fell in love with, these black people fell in love with Reverend Fred. And they fell in love with the church, and the church fell in love with them. It was, I got a chance to preach. I got a chance to preach in that pulpit. And I preached about the Good Samaritan. And my question was, do you know that you, Trinity, was the Good Samaritan? Mayor of Ruston told me, he said, I have been waiting to hear you preach, but you have really convicted me. And I said, I hope not in a bad way. He said, you made me think, Connie. I'm always giving money, but I never gave my hands. So that was strong. That whatever I brought to the table, to that from the pulpit, it made them realize your money is good, but can you be the hands of God? Can you be the feet of God?
Did members of the congregation take people in?
Oh yes, another okay. Then I had another. I know everybody. I had another family. My friend, he's really a distant cousin, Dr. Cyrus Watson, called me. He was the chairman in the Department of Education Psychology at UNO. He called and he said, "I can't leave, Connie, but my mother and my father and my brother and my sister, they're coming up there. They need a place. What can you do?" I went to McGee, Don McGee. I went to Don McGee. Don McGee gave my family a place to live. And they were there for at least 4 or 5 months. In fact, I call her my godmother. She took over the house. She was cooking for everybody. And that wasn't the only family. We had, I believe, Ernest Young family took some. A lot of people took different people into their homes from Trinity. Another lady I met, one of the Baptist churches took, she stayed with a family from a Baptist church, Beverly Johnson. And Beverly and I became very close friends from, she was from here, but I never knew her until she came to eat. There were a lot of people came to eat with us at all our meals at Trinity, but they didn't stay there with us. They would come and eat, but they stayed other places. She stayed somewhere else. I helped a whole bunch of ladies to go back. I drove back to New Orleans to help them get their cars that was left in Baton Rouge. I got a couple of ladies that wanted to go back to school. And the nurse and at Grambling, I didn't help anybody to go to school at Tech, but I did help a couple of ladies to get in school and graduate from Grambling State.
Did you start to view the congregation in different ways following this response to the events of Katrina?
Oh yeah, I start seeing them in a different light. The ones who were quiet and I thought they were mean, I saw them in a different light. Oh my God. And my United Methodist women, oh my God, they just blossomed. They blossomed. They were beautiful. They were cooking and making cookies and making casseroles and all kind of great things. And the women of United Methodist Church of Trinity, I don't know where all that material came from. They had a lot of material. They set up a sewing room. Dr. Holt, we had more quilts coming out of that place. They made prayer quilts. We started taking prayer quilts to the nursing home, prayer quilts, and pillows were being given to the people that were staying with us and those who didn't stay with us. Just okay, just beautiful things started happening.
And so meanwhile,
Trinity.
what was going on? What was going on campus? What was going on with the sort of the spiritual life, what the students were doing to help
Oh,
out?
all the students were doing some great things also. The beds, I told you about the gym. They had the gym laid up with beds, and they were taking people who needed to go back and forth to the stores. Oh, we had we caravans taking people to the store, going to the drugstore, getting them to Shreveport. They had to go to the doctor. Just all kind of wonderful things was happening. A whole new world has started.
What kind of a role did Trinity and the United Method, your the United Campus Ministry have with
Campus
relief
ministry.
efforts down south, particularly where involvement with UMCOR, other groups like that?
Oh, with those groups. Well, we just did whatever was asked of us to help. We wind up doing things like bringing gifts for the children later on. Because campus ministry, we had a ministry called Angel Tree. And Angel Tree, and the feeding of the homeless. We still had people. We still had clothes that we brought down there. We would. We had one lady, bless her heart, she's deceased now. We called her Madea, Robertine Malone. Her uncle was the first mayor of Gremlin, and she was a part of our board of directors in campus ministry. And oh, the people at Trinity loved Madea. But Madea had me, we did a sock drive, blanket drive, clothes drive, and we would bring clothes back to New Orleans. We would bring clothes to New Orleans. We would go under the bridge and bring it to the under the bridge. We would come and do a worship service for the homeless at the homeless shelter and meet with them. Call the people that we had already made friends with from living with us in during Katrina, and we would meet with them, and they would want to meet with us and feed us. They want to feed us. I had one lady, oh my God, Miss Shirley, across the river from New Orleans. She would cook fish, and oh my God, well, I think we all 16 or 20 of us stayed in her house. She had us to stay in her house. And they were all on the floor and everything, but she had beds, and she cooked food to show us how thankful they were for us. They even put money in our account. She would get money and send to Trinity for our ministry. So people were giving back to us as well as we gave to them. They would give back. And we not only had toys that we brought to the children in New Orleans, every year, instead of just doing like 25 children, we would wind up doing over 120 children. And we would get the clubs, the different clubs in the certain departments. I think even your history department put the history department, they helped out. And some of them just bought cards, gift cards, but the clubs and the different groups, they helped us with that. And then we had one lady, she was a United Methodist women group woman, but she didn't go to Trinity. She was Jonesboro somewhere. Anyway, she sent me some bags through Marsha. I thought it was so neat. She made about 20 or 30 bags. It was the Glad bags, the gallon Glad bags. She wrote up what she had in the bags. And she wanted me to drop this off in New Orleans to the homeless people. It was a bag that consists of fruit, water, crackers, potted meat. Food that could sustain them. And I think we even had some people had money in theirs, but we wind up getting oh Lord, Dr. Hall, we wind up having bags. I mean, I think I had two vans I took down there. My vans were packed with food from ground. These clubs, these young people, and churches got so excited about making the homeless kits, the homeless bag kits, and we got excited. Yeah, because they don't get, that's right, they didn't get food on the weekends. So we from Grambling and even Trinity took that down. And yes, Trinity gave us, we had a van from Trinity, and then I bought, so it was three vans. I bought two vans, and then you drove a van. Oh, Joe, you drove a van. Yeah, so we had, and then my van, because I had a van myself. Trinity opened some doors for us, and it was bridging the gap between, bridging the gap of Trinity and Grambling State.
Were you all involved with the toy drive that the radio station put on?
The only thing we did, we would buy gifts and bring them over
Okay.
there, but we didn't take part. You know, we weren't a partner. We would just give gifts. I think we give the we would give like maybe two or three bikes, maybe. I would get that, but we were not a part of. Our thing was the angel tree, and with the angel tree, we got a chance. When I took my students to a student forum that was held in Washington, D.C., the man, the president of Angel Tree, wanted to meet Grambling State students because he said we were the first college group down south to do this. So he got a chance to meet my students and take pictures and all, recognition of what we at Grambling State was doing. And we would bring these gifts. Now, we not only did it for New Orleans, but we also had children that was right there in the Grambling area who parents were incarcerated. But somebody sent me from California 600 bears or more. Oh, 600 cases. That's right. I had 600 cases of teddy bears that was given to us. And we wind up taking those teddy bears, and it had scripture. We call it the prayer bear. So I was prayer bear. We start giving prayer bears out to people in New Orleans, wherever we would go to the nursing home on different holidays. We would bring that the prayer bear to them, and then I taught my kids, my girls, really, how to make little blankets and prayer blankets. It would cut blanket. And then tie it. We call it the ties. And we would bless them and take them to people who had cancer. So we did a lot. And then we had the men of integrity. We had a group of men of integrity. My men of integrity became Masons because you have a lot of Masons in Trinity Church. And so we were the first African American, Scott Wright. Scott Wright Masons in Collegiate. And my Eastern Stars were the first for that. And Ernest and a couple of more men from Trinity, they supported us. I brought in, I think it's 75 girls into the Eastern Stars.
How do you feel that Grambling changed as a result of Hurricane Katrina?
How did Grambling change? I think they became more open and they didn't look at it as those white people. They looked at it more as, wow, we can be together. And I think that's what I brought to them. It was an openness. That they could be, we can be a family. We can be Christians and walk together. We can work together, walk together, and serve together and learn together. But I believe that there was a change that happened. A change happened.
You've been listening to the Voices of Grambling, a digital oral history podcast, a production of the students in the faculty of Grambling State University History Department, along with the faculty of University of Arkansas. Be sure to listen in to one of our other episodes, and if you have a voice you would like to share or have a nomination for a voice that needs to be heard, feel free to contact the History Department for more information.